Welcome to the Round 6 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week we're joined, as per usual, by FB Donkey.
G'day, Marcus.
And we've got special guest Dunny back with us this week.
Dunny.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me, guys. Great to be back.
Always awesome to have you on. This week, we've taken the questions, as per usual, from social media. So thank you to you guys again at Supercoach Coach on Twitter and on Facebook.com/Supercoach Coach. And a huge amount of activity as well, Mark, on the Supercoach Coach forums after the first week of upgrades.
Yeah, I think people are liking the new outlook, mate. Looks good.
Yep.
Easy to access.
If you haven't checked it out already, get right on it. Tumming along. Yeah, we'll jump into how we actually scored. I am in a terrible mood, so we might as well just get it done and over with. Mark, you can just start off.
Well, at least your team won on the weekend, mate. The Cats, the Bombers and Port, not so much. And not a great day as a Bombers supporter either today, waking up with that terrible news this morning. The team went all right on the weekend. I got 21.72. I went up in the rankings to 4,300, but it didn't feel like a very good score. I had Lewis and Bennell sitting on the pine, which meant that I had to play Hogan and Vandenberg on the field. So probably that was the difference between a good score and a really good score. Pretty happy with most of the things going on. Backline's obviously falling apart, but I brought in two players this week. I brought in JPK, 135, and Tom McDonald, 123.
Ooh.
It's nice when they go hard like that first week.
So bloody jealous, because since Kennedy went down, he's been number one on my target list. And I didn't bring him in last week because I had to trade bloody Kelly out.
I had to trade Kelly out too, mate. Straight to Tom McDonald. You know that 123 guy?
Yeah, I know. But you already got Bell Chambers off your ruck. And I thought that was pretty important. So I did that this week and I got, you know, Ryder on there. Dunny, how'd you go?
I had 20.58, so not nearly as good as you guys, but my team has been a bit of a disaster from the start this year. But I made a couple of good moves this week thanks to some excellent advice that I gained from some guy at Supercoach Coach. Can't think of his name. I actually ended up going early on McKenzie from St Kilda and was happy with his 80 despite the fact I had it on the bench. And the other one, I guess, change I would have loved to have made would have been putting Salem on the field over McCarthy. I mean, that would have netted about another 80-odd points, which would have been pretty handy.
Really frustrated by that score, just where you're on Salem, because all preseason I was really hot on Salem. I really thought that he could have a game like that in him, and then I traded him out a couple of weeks ago just because he hadn't performed in the first five weeks, and then bang, straight out with it.
Whatever, mate. You traded him out a couple of weeks ago. I traded him out this week for somebody who scored less. God, that was painful.
So I still got him, and it was good to see Kolodziejny actually get a half-decent score with a 94. I've still got him sitting there on the bench, but I did also bring in Mundy this week with his 113. I ditched Ben Newton to bring him in, so pretty happy with his form.
I got Sandwich in the middle again, seems to be the case for me. 20.75, so disappointing, but I had money on the pine this week, so expected that a little bit, as well as, you know, Bennell and Hodge out, so the team was light on, but PS103 again, which is sick. Two 100 plus games, so super happy with him. He's already at 400k. I brought in Ryder and Shaw this week. Ryder had a bit of a quieter one. If he kicked the goal, would have been a decent score. So hopefully he turns it around. But I'm just keen to be able to keep Bell Chambers off the field. He scored 63 this week. So looking forward to keeping him out. Once Bennell gets back, Shaw was all right with an 89 first up. Not really too much to say. I dropped down to 16,000. And I've really not had a season like this in a really long time. 4 years top 500, and then last year I just missed out, but I was still riding high for most of the season. I'm being smashed at the moment, so I am not in a good mood, gents, and I hope you've got some positivity for me as we head on into the show. So start with the questions already. So the first question is from Dean Phelps this week, and we'll start with the injury trades, guys. Big one this week is Rory Sloane. So Dean wants to know, with suspensions, injuries to premiums, and burning through trades just to keep a side on the park, at what point do we consider holding players with a 4 to 6 week injury like Sloane? So you hadn't heard already, it was a confirmed fractured cheekbone, so he's out for at least a month. Is there any point to holding Sloane, or you're definitely trading him out if he's out for a month?
I usually look at 3 weeks being the absolute maximum that I would hold someone with those sorts of dollars on my pine. Geez, I don't think you could hold him, but yeah, as I said, for me, normally I look at 3 weeks as being the maximum that I'm willing to hold someone.
I wonder whether this is a normal season though, Dunny.
And that is an excellent point, mate. And you're right, the fact that we have had so many injuries and having to burn through trades, maybe you do need to stretch it.
I think that there'll be a case where doing that once during the year, holding that player for a little bit longer will probably work out, like whether someone holds a James Kelly or Hodgie like Marcus is holding, just holding the player for that extra little bit of time will probably work out at some stage. I worry about Sloan. If it's closer to the 6 week mark, then he'll be missing until at least after their bye, which sort of just makes sense that he would be missing until at least after their bye, and that's going to make it really tricky getting enough players on the field.
I can see Adelaide being super cautious with him. I think they only play one team who were in the last year's top eight between now and their bye, so they do have a pretty good run still, and I think they just won't risk him till after that. That's just my feeling on it, though. I think, yeah, with Marcus, you're holding Hodge because he's got a suspension, not an injury, and, you know, it's a defined period of time, which also makes a bit of a difference to me.
I 100% agree with you. I think the fortunate thing is that with a fractured cheekbone, the time period should be a little bit more solid. You don't tend to get, you know, those hamstring injuries that can drag on. But I still think, yeah, you just have to trade in that situation. And so
it really sucks.
Yeah, it's terrible. Considering he's doing so well, sucks more for the people that traded him in, I think. If you started him, you got a sick run, I think. It was a bit unfortunate, but heart goes out to people traded him in for, you know, Ablett. We'll move on, though, to actual replacements for him, because we've got 30 trades. It's dwindling, but we've still got trades to deal with these. So we'll look for some positivity and some replacements for him. First one is brought up by Braveheart, or at CarltonJers87. Is Barlow a good POD for the Sloan trade? So talked about him actually being a bit quiet for the first few rounds of the season, but he had actually a 116 game on the weekend, which followed a 104 in round 5. What do you guys reckon about Barlow?
Well, obviously, Dunny's not going to be bringing him in, because that'd be Mundy, Fife and Barlow in his midfield. I'm a bit worried about the Fremantle mids, to be honest. Mundy's got away early. Neil's stealing a bunch of the points. And from what I witnessed on the weekend, and as the commentators were saying, we have seen it in other games, Freo just took their foot right off the pedal. So I think that might add a little bit of unpredictability to some of the scores of their premiums. And they do seem to be really managing some of their players. I guess the other issue with Barlow is that he has had a few durability concerns in the past. So I think that whether he's going to play midfield all the time, given the extra depth that they have this year, the extra possibility of getting rest, he's probably an okay pick, but I'm not that inspired to take him.
If there's a midfield averaging 92, you probably shouldn't bring him in, even if he's cheap. I think, you know, even if the value's there, you don't want risking bringing a player that's going to average 105 and be disappointing because they don't end up being good enough to match it with the ultra-premium mids. Steer clear. And I think Mark's great point about the just depth there. With Neil stepping up, I mean, we always talk about Fremantle being very deep midfield, but with Neil stepping up, it's the Sydney situation, and Ross Lyon plays more tricks than any other coach, so that's not great for the premiums either. Apart from Barlow, guys, who do you guys actually like for Sloan? I think if you don't have Robbie Gray, this is your opportunity to bring him in. Dylan Scheel, he went up 20K this week, but he's still 560 and he's averaging 117.
I think Selwood's the obvious one without his price and probably slightly lower ownership. I just wonder whether you take him even though he's got the hand injury.
He was interviewed and apparently it's really not a big deal at all, but of course that's what Joel Selwood would say. It really didn't seem to impair him at all in terms of how he even brought the fist to ball. So you'd assume once the swelling comes down, as long as they're not lying about the hand being broken, which I assume they're not, you'd think that he'd be in a better situation than last week. So of all the guys we talked about, probably the one that screams out is Selwood, like you said, Mark, 557, although he's not really on song. I brought up Kennedy a bit earlier on, 560. I'm still looking at him. I think he's a great get at that price. But really, there's not too many absolute cheapies that have bottomed out. And that brings us to the next question from Blair Dewsbury, or Rick James 7, and he's asking whether it's worth holding Sloan on the bench and waiting for someone like Rocky next week. So Rocky had that zero in his price movements, and that's cycling out next week. So his break-even's still 199. He's going to drop from 495.
I think you'd probably have another way to pick up Rocky next week, maybe upgrading a rookie. So I'd probably try and get the points on the field from Sloan Bowen this week, and then yeah, maybe use someone else to get Rockliffe next week. I think we'll probably have a fair bit of a discussion about Rockliffe next week, given he will be so cheap. He didn't score extremely well in their win on the weekend, but then he's still sort of fighting his way back from injury. I'm definitely interested at around the $400,000 mark. That'd be a crazy price to pay for him.
Yeah, I agree, mate. I think he's another good 1 to 2 weeks away before I'll be thinking about picking him up. I want to see a couple of consistent games from him before I bring him back in at the moment.
He did score 97, guys, so if he scores another 97 and he does drop to, you know, 430,000, that'll put him at, he will probably bottom out pretty quickly, and he has huge scoring potential in him. So I'm pretty keen to pick him up soon as, but overall, I agree. Just look for a different way to bring Rockley in and, yeah, get the points on field this week. So we'll move on to the next question from Carl Voloshki, and he's commenting that he just saw that Saad's gone down with a hamstring, so he's not happy at all. Swear words were used, and we won't repeat them here.
Do you know much about this one, Dunny?
Only from what I've seen come across social media, etc., today, and that was that he will be definitely missing this week. Didn't hear or see anything which said how many weeks, so I'm assuming at the moment it's 1 to 2, but who knows? A rookie with a hammy is always fraught with danger, if you ask me.
Yeah, I think I saw the phrase could miss multiple weeks, which is the most unconvincing statement ever, because it just doesn't say anything. Yeah, really unsure about this one. I'd probably a keep, though. Like, I was hoping to keep him for a fair bit longer, actually, but if it's only a couple of weeks, I'd definitely want to get at least a bit more information.
Yeah, I think I'll be holding him. He's made us 210,000 so far, and his break even is still negative at -4. So for me, I'll be holding Saad.
I'm holding, and I'm losing troops fast. So that'll be, I mean, Hodge and Saad on the bench. I can't do that. So McKenzie comes into the midfield for me this week, and Saad swaps there and stays in the midfield next to Cam Ellis-Yeoman. So things are going swimmingly.
There's others out there that still have Kelly. They've got Henderson, Goods. They've got a few more issues than you, mate.
Still teams out there with Ablett in them.
They've clearly given up them. So with that, we've got Curtis Seven's question. Now, he's asking, do you know where I can buy more trades? 30 is not enough. So I think that's a good way to end the injury segment. And it took us a while to get through. This is fairly hefty these last few weeks. I think we almost need, I need a bloody sound effect. I'll go find one to mark the end of these long injury segments. With that, we'll move to some more interesting and positive topics. And that's the rookies up next. So we've got two that were flagged last week that we've got to look at this week. Josh Glenn from Gold Coast Suns, 103 in the first week, and then a disappointing 36 this week, but still break even of -66, priced at 120 in the midfield. Supercoach break evens, remember, on supercoachcoach.com.au, posted every Monday, so don't forget, you can check it out there. And we've also got Daniel McKenzie on the bubble, and I find him particularly attractive because he's a back mid, a DPP, so like I said, going to save me from Saad donuts. -72 break even, 63 and 80 his first two games. So have you guys watched them, and what do you reckon?
Really liked what I saw from McKenzie. I mean, I really liked what I saw from a lot of Saints on the weekend, though, in that second half. McKenzie's still going to potentially be out, in and out of the side, or a sub. There are players still to come back for the Saints, but from what he showed on the weekend, that he at least will be definitely selected this week and can at least have his chance to prove himself this year. So McKenzie looks like a bit of a lock to me, given the flexibility that you discussed, Marcus.
Yeah, and that's the question that we got from Teddy underscore McKay. Is McKenzie a no-brainer? Yeah, I'd agree with that, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. I jumped on him last week for various reasons and very happy with what I've seen.
So with that, we'll move on to who to actually trade out for him. So got a lot of people actually mentioning Heaney, and that makes a lot of sense. Like I said, I'm going to trade him out probably for Heaney, but we've got question here from Paul Cassatt. He's asking whether or not to trade McIntosh out instead for McKenzie. So you don't open up that DPP straight away, but of course you have that option at any time. But you get rid of Camden, who apart from his first big game, really kind of struggling to make an impact. He plays an outside game, but he doesn't have the best foot disposal, so seems to be struggling a bit.
Yeah, I wouldn't even really surprise me to see him drop this week, which would put even more pressure on people's backlines. Look, I think that McIntosh out this week, as long as it works for your buyers, because McIntosh being round 11 and McKenzie being round 12 buyer, as long as that's working for your buyers, I don't think it's a terrible trade. You're not earning as much as you were hoping from McIntosh, but he hasn't been scoring as well as you were hoping.
Yeah, he only went up 5,700 this week, and with a break even of 33, I can't see him jumping a huge amount more. Just looking at his scoring, yeah, he's had now two scores in the 40s, along with a couple in the 60s and a 70 to go with that opening 120. So I think you're right, Mark. I actually think he could be in danger of getting dropped, particularly given the Tigers' form of late as well.
He plays that sort of game where if you're going to drop a player, you look at that sort of outside, more outside game and you go, yeah, that's a bit of a danger position. You're also a smaller bloke. I think, though, if he stays in the team, like if he goes out, he's going to cause me massive headaches and he'll probably have to go. But if he stays in the team, I think as long as he stays plodding along this price, all it takes is another big game down the road and he can jump up to 350. So if you don't have to trade him, I think Heaney is a more obvious trade out. I'd do that ahead.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm quite happy to keep McIntosh for a little bit. If he's named and he's not the sub, I'm quite happy to keep him. It's just that situation might change. But Heaney, it's obviously really disappointing at $234,000 to trade him out, but given he's out for at least 4 to 6 weeks, I think you just have to probably pull the trigger because it's taking you through the buys and you don't want to be carrying through that period.
No, he's a definite out. So, how did we miss him for the injury trades? Because he's a definite out, that's why. Kenzie's probably the big trade in. Matthew Donnelly's question's up next, and it's good timing because now that we've decided that Heaney to McKenzie will be a fairly popular trade, he's wanting to know whether it's a double down this week, another double down with McKenzie and Glenn, or is it a one up and one down this week? And that means most of us miss out on Josh Glenn. What are your thoughts?
I think I heard reports that Glenn limped off with an ankle injury at training today. I think that combined with his 30-odd from the weekend in a depleted Suns where he would have been given plenty of opportunity to get around the ball, that's not really great signs, I don't think, and wouldn't completely surprise me to see him drop this week as well, I guess, with a bunch of those Suns boys coming back in. Going into the weekend, I thought it would be a double-down week this week, but definitely called pretty strongly on Glenn.
Completely agreeing with you there, Mark. Everyone seems to think that he will get dropped this week. Remains to be seen, but if he has limped off with that ankle injury as suspected today, I think it's almost a foregone conclusion that he won't be playing this week. Disappointing, because after that first round, as you say, everyone was really keen on him, and he's got a break even of negative 67, but yeah, I don't think his job security is that good.
Another thing to consider is there are a few rookies around. I think you had Stretch from Melbourne, Lever for the Crows. There's a couple around at the moment or coming into the bubble in the next couple of weeks, so I don't think it's that urgent to double down this week.
Yep, and if you've got cash like me, it's not even an option at all, so I was only ever going to pick one. We'll move on to the backline questions now, positionally, is how we'll go through the rest of these social media questions, and we'll start from Tim's question, or at Scrummit. Is it time to cut our losses with Hibbard? Is he playing a new role this year? So notice a particularly stinging 41 a couple of weeks ago, but then it's only 75 this week. Hooker, Hurley, they seem to be getting more of the points down back. Mark, what do you reckon as an Essendon supporter?
At halftime, I would have been pretty close to agreeing with Tim on this one. I think it was on about 23 at halftime, but ended up posting a reasonably respectable score. And what I saw in the second half was the old Hibbard. Maybe Fremantle had sort of backed off and they weren't tagging him so hard, but it was the Hibbard intercept marks, intercept possessions, carrying the ball, kicking the ball to inside 50. That was a good enough sign to me to think that hopefully we see a bit more of that. Maybe what's been happening is that structurally teams have been shutting him down and keeping him out of the play a fair bit because he can be so dangerous if he's getting up the ground. Obviously, it's hard to say whether teams are going to keep doing that or keep doing it successfully, but I think we saw at least a few good signs on Sunday and he wasn't dropping his marks like he has been the previous few weeks.
I wouldn't be bringing him in, but like I said last week, I'd hold him until the buys at the very least. I like Hibbert a lot as a player, and I reckon he can turn it around. We'll probably leave it at that for the rest of the season until the buys with Hibbert, guys.
If you're trading out Hibbert, then you must have dodged a lot of injuries.
Yeah. We'll move on to the midfield now, and it's a question from at Ty Hamilton. What to do with the Kangaroos captain, spit or swallow? So, love the wording. Dunny, what do you reckon about Andrew Swallow? Just not cutting the mustard.
And there was a lot of talk about him pre-season, but he's just not living up to that hype, I guess is what you'd call it. I mean, his highest score has only been 103. For me, that's definitely not enough for one of your primo midfielders. He was cheap at about 500 when you bought him. It's another trade, and if you can afford to make a luxury trade, then yeah, I'd probably be moving him on.
I think I'd lean towards just keeping him. He's copped a bit of a beating lately in the Hawks game, and so he probably was never going to be fired up against the Tigers.
think I'd agree with you, Mark. I think at this point in the season, you want to be upgrading and downgrading. I think if you spend too much time sideways and you don't get to accelerate your team as quickly, and you find you might be a premium behind because you spent an extra week just fixing something rather than and charging on ahead. So, yeah, I'd probably just go on to the buys as well. But, you know, I can understand the frustration. It's a bit similar to Griffin. We talked about Griffin last week. Yeah, they're both performing pretty poorly. But we'll move on to Chris Morris's question next. He's asking about Stevie J. So he started off with a blinder and then stinkers and just Steve Johnson like. Very, very inconsistent. 425,000. Finally posted another big one with 130. Now, personally, for me, I want him to play sick football because that's when Joel Selwood gets the most points. When Steve Johnson gets to steal the tag, oh, God, it's so good for my team. So I'm hoping he plays great football. But do you guys think he's actually a legitimate option? Because he's only a midfielder. He doesn't have that mid-forward DPP anymore.
I think that based on the evidence that we've seen, the fact that he was sub for a game, he seems to show that he has the old Stevie J's in there, but I'm not sure that we're going to see it on a reliable basis this year.
I think I agree, mate. And with them playing Sydney at ANZ this week, I'd probably at least leave it another week before I look to bring him in too.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. I think if you're bringing in a player like Stevie J, in the midfield especially, you're probably looking at him as a stepladder, which is fair enough because when he goes big, he'll be a brilliant stepladder. He'll score 130 points and go up a heap. But I think that's a very good point Dunny brings up. You actually want to watch out for the draw then with these sorts of stepladder players and make sure you get them at the right point, not when they're playing Sydney. Next, on to Damian Walsh's question. Can Rich still make money or does he need to go? Daniel Rich priced at 401,000 and we got so many questions about him that, you know, I can't leave him out. Although we do tend to touch on him quite often, but a 53 on the weekend is his lowest for the season by a fair margin. 74 was the previous low and that gives him the lowest three games in his last three rounds, which is not good news at all.
I think that on the weekend, Carlton ran with three taggers like they normally do, which I find so interesting considering Mick never used to tag at all at Collingwood. And one of them went to Beams, which was Wiley, and someone went to Rich as well, which he's not going to get a tag every week. But when he does cop attention, it does seem to affect his scoring quite significantly. Yeah.
The unfortunate part about Rich is that Brisbane have the round 11 bye, so he's a very unfortunate player in terms of a stepladder in the fact that you can't sideways him to dodge a donut around the byes, which is a big reason why we ruled him out during the preseason. That's why we're not big fans of mid-prices, especially those with the early buy, that first buy. So if you're not happy with him, the three of us aren't huge fans, so like, you can understand pulling the trigger. But at the same time, Vandenberg's 100k less. So, I mean, if you can forfeit that value, it's probably worthwhile keeping Rich in your team and hoping he does better. On to the next question, and we'll move on to the forward line now. And the first is from Fabregasto from Twitter. Am I really going to be sucked in to Tom Mitchell again? At least the Heaney injury will help his job security slightly. So Mark's already getting bloody excited. So if you guys remember, he knighted Tom Mitchell as his number one lock. Maybe ahead of Swan. He was going batshit crazy for him. And he of course,
that was our first show of the preseason.
And of course, you know, we called as preseason went on. And now he's finally broken into the team. 114, 125. So I've just got to warn you guys, Mark's just going to lose his nut in a sec. So here we go.
Well, I did think that we should have just titled this show the Tom Mitchell and Daniel McKenzie show and just said, trade those two guys in, don't think about it, and that's all you need to do. I think I see Tom Mitchell as the potential to be Luke Parker Mark II. Yeah, you might get burnt by him again, and yep, you might get sucked in by him, but I think that you still have to pick him this week at 405,000 with a really strong potential to average 100 or more, available as a forward and a midfielder. I just don't think that you could pass him up this week. He plays for the Swans. They named him on ball this week. Longmire said that he's learned a few of his lessons and that Longmire really hopes he can string a few games together. And I think that he'll be given a lot of opportunities to do that because Sydney do need to regenerate. And you can't keep someone of Tom Mitchell's talent in the reserves forever. Eventually, he would just go, we'll stuff you. I'm going to go play somewhere else. So, yeah, I think that they have to give him a shot. It's been interesting that Luke Parker's probably played a bit more up forward and Jack's played a bit more up forward and they've given Mitchell actually a run on the ball. Obviously, that might not happen every week and they can rotate the players through there, but 405,000, I think you get a fair bit of insurance. His upside is so big that you wouldn't want to miss out on that if it happens.
Look, I agree, mate. I think you can't go past him this week. The first thing he's going to do is go well up in dollars, but the only concern that I have on Tom Mitchell at all is his job security. But now with Heaney out, they're going to need that other midfielder, which he will give them. I don't think he'll be getting any vests in a hurry. I think there's other guys in that team who are more likely to get them than him. So at that price and with the potential that he's got, I mean, he's done it in the past. We've seen him go on big runs of scores. I think it's a no-brainer. You've got to pick him up.
Okay, so
Let's move on.
I'm going to buck the trend. I disagree. I might not actually bring the guy in this week. I've got Fife, Pendlebury. I want to bring in Kennedy. That gives me three midfield round 12 bye players. I've already got Swan and Bennell, so he'll give me an actual non-playing player on the field, so I have to be really convinced about him. I think the main point is if you see him being an absolute blowout player at his price, so that's probably a player that can average 110, because there's plenty of guys that can average 105 in the forward line, then he's probably a must-have. If you even see that potential in him, he's a must-have, currently averaging 118. But if you question that, and I question that a little bit, I think he might not be a must-have. I don't think that that probably is his ceiling. I think we're getting a bit overhyped. Then you might not want to bring him in because of buy situations, or I've got money this week. I want to bring in a premium midfielder instead. I think he isn't a must-have, and I definitely understand the hype, and I definitely, like, if you can bring him in, if he works for you this week, go for it, and I'm not going to dissuade anyone from bringing him in, because I think he's a good pick. He just actually causes me a bit of a buy headache. I can use the money elsewhere, and Jack Zeeble's priced at, like, 8K more, and there's not the same hype on him, and, like, is that because Zeeble played the first four games? Like, we don't have a form line on Mitchell, and we haven't seen his downside. Just to be fair to the selection, there's Hannabury, there's Kennedy, there's Parker. Like, we talk about the Sydney midfield being the most stacked. Parker's not getting points every week. Like, Parker's not averaging 118. Do you really think Mitchell can maintain a 110 average? I think there's legitimate questions over him. There's good options in and around his price range. Like Zeeble, 405, and we've talked him up previously. He's averaging 100 if you take out his four. I don't think he's a must-have. And I know that's controversial because we've got two people that love Mitchell, but I think that's fine to present some counter view and counterbalance to that.
I mean, if Zeeble was an all right pick last week, then I think that Mitchell is a much better pick this week, because I know Mitchell's been in and out of the team, but Zeeble's injury history is just crazy. And Zeeble also has shown over the course of the season that he's only had, I think, two games over 100 out of six now. So, and one of them was like right on 100. So, whereas Mitchell, two games, both really good. Do I think that Mitchell could go past Parker and become a better player than Parker? I know Parker had a huge second half of last year. He was really, really good. But do I think that Mitchell could be a better player than Parker? Yes, I absolutely do.
I think one of the other things you mentioned there, Marcus, was, you know, you've got Hannabury, Kennedy, Parker, all sitting in that midfield. Well, there's three guys who are going to get attention before Tom Mitchell even gets a look at by the opposition. And you, also, you know, throwing Kieran Jack as well.
Like, yeah, there's McVay. I mean, I just think, to put in context, and I don't think that that's a hugely contentious claim to say that Mitchell could be a better player than Parker one day. But that is still a big call, and not everyone will feel that way, because Parker is the reigning best and fairest, and he's a sick player. But you need to be evaluating Mitchell in that light if you consider him a must-have at 405K. And we're going to get to some other listener questions about the Bont and Goddard. There's great options. If you don't have Gray, like I said, Mark, all the points you bring up are good. So I can't fault Mitchell as a pick. All I'd say is there are other options. Different teams have different setups and different structures, and I don't think he's a must-have. And I don't think that's crazy contentious.
Can I just throw in there, you're talking about the points to go around in that midfield. If we just look at last week, he had 125, JPK 135, McVay 115, Jack 110, Parker 119, McGlynn 109, Jeddah 110. Yeah, there was a lot of points in that midfield for that Sydney team. All right, they did play Melbourne, granted, but they seem to be fairly evenly spread across those guys.
But Kennedy scored a 61. I mean, Kieran Jack scored 69, 54, 78. Luke Parker scored a 78, 77, and 84. Like, I really think that we're glossing over a few things because we're getting pretty excited about Mitchell. Yes, it's fine to say he's a great pick, but there's some legitimate concerns that we shouldn't just brush under the carpet because we want to say he's a great pick.
There are absolutely some legitimate concerns, and Danny brought up the biggest one straight away, and that is his job security and his role security. And is he going to be playing on the ball every week? And is he going to be playing every week? Is he going to piss John Longmire off again? There's absolutely some real risks here, like there was with Zeeble last week. It's just that the upside, it's very hard to predict a must-have, and it's very hard to know a must-have in advance, but he feels like the sort of player that if you don't get him, you could regret that pretty heavy. You could pay a really heavy price for not getting him. And because so many people pick him up, you're not going to pay that high a price if you do get him and he fails.
I think he's the safe selection this week, and most people will probably bring in Mitchell McKenzie. And like you said, Mark, it'll be a one-minute podcast for most people. They can skip through most of it. But I think, like you said, Mark, you do need to view him in that light. You do need to see him with that sort of potential, with that sort of ability to hurt you if you don't have him. And if you do think he has that potential, then, like I said, you shouldn't really even think about it. And like Mark said, that's why he's fighting so adamantly for his lock status, because Mark truly believes about that huge scoring potential. And Dunny, are you right on board with that?
I'm probably not quite leading the train like Mark is, but I'm pretty close behind him, to be honest. I think he does have massive upside. Like I said, we've seen it before. And if he can stay in that team, I think he can definitely produce at worst for you, probably a 95 to a 100 average sitting in your forward line.
Alrighty then.
But check your buys. Check your buys.
Yes, definitely.
Yes, yes.
See, I know if I bring him in, well, I probably will. It's probably going to hurt my buy structure to a degree there.
We need a soundbite for that too, just to randomly intersperse that. Because now that we're hitting the upgrade season, pretty much everything that we talk about needs to be with that disclaimer, as long as it works for your buys. Please yeah. check your buys. Please don't do anything silly without checking your buys.
Check your buys.
Yeah. All right. Move on to the next question. Still on the Mitchell topic, but Bradley Wilson. If you don't have Gray, would you bring in Gray instead?
That's only because I like Robbie Gray.
As a Port supporter, yeah.
Exactly.
I think it's probably close, but I think that Port having a different buy, Gray just showing like really, truly elite scoring potential available as a forward, yeah, I'd probably lean towards Gray.
It's not even a question for me, guys. For me, it's like asking, hey, there's these two options. One of them could be a guy that you really, really, really regret not having, and one of them is already a guy you're going to really regret not having. He scored 134, 143. His lowest game, 73. That came with a corky, which he probably shouldn't have played the game with because he missed the next game. 114 is his next lowest. Like, he's going to kill you if you don't have him. Mark brought him in after a week or two, so
yeah, and then copped his 70 and week out.
But
yeah,
I mean, it's worth it, isn't it? He's still averaging 117.
It was definitely a mistake not to start him. He is a very, very obvious pick, and he is an absolute must-have in Supercoach.
There we go. So I'd definitely Gray if you don't have him. And then Pat Villanova's question. Tom Mitchell or the Bont? So I'm assuming you guys are very much don't touch the Bont at 100K more this week.
It's not don't touch the Bont at all. He's super impressive. Really, really like watching him play. He was meandering towards a pretty average score on the weekend until he got busy in the last few minutes, but can't really bring that up because he doesn't seem to do that every week when the game's on the line, he gets busy. But I think for 100,000 cheaper, you just have to take Mitchell this week.
I agree. I think for that price difference is why you're probably not going to pick the Bont. I think he's also going to get more attention in that Doggies team than what Mitchell's going to in that Swans team as well.
So here's why I'm considering picking up the Bont and just bucking all the trends. Dustin Martin is my only round 11 buy player. So I could bring in Mitchell and give myself a third round 12 buy player, or I could just even things up and bring in Bontempelli. And I think you can make equal argument that Bontempelli is one of those players that if you don't have him, he could average 110 and really burn you as well. So even though he costs more, if he works for your buy structure, again, I'm not as hot on Mitchell, so this is a counterpoint, but my two cents is that Bontempelli could be a better pick.
I think that's just silly. It's just crazy talk, really, though. If you pay the $500,000 for him and he averages close to 110, it's not anywhere near going to burn you as much as if you'd paid $400,000 for someone that averages 110.
Well, I just don't think the likelihood of Bontempelli and Mitchell averaging 110 is similar.
You actually would believe that Bontempelli is a higher chance than Mitchell of averaging 110.
Mark, I'll put it to you this way. Mitchell's, including these two games he's played, he's still played less than 22 games. There's an equal case for, I think, Bontempelli. Like I said, I like the pick, Mark. I just don't think he works for everyone. He gives me a donut on field, potentially.
I think something else you got to consider there also is the team that they're in. All right, the Dogs have got off to a ripping start, but can they continue that for the next 16 weeks, whereas I back the Swans in to have more winning games than the Dogs will, which will obviously affect his scoring as well.
Yeah. And look, all I am is a third person. There's still two people who prefer Mitchell, Mark, so you don't have to get so offended that I wouldn't mind the Bont because he won't cost me so heavily during the buys. Yeah, I think it makes more sense.
Okay, so let's put it down to that you're paying $100,000 for, let's just say they average exactly the same, $100,000 for 1 week's cover during the buys. I'm not sure that that's necessarily worth it.
Again, my read on Bontempelli and Mitchell's different. Like, I think Mitchell's, if he's going to really break out, he's more likely to just bang on and get a huge 110. But if he doesn't, he could average 95 for the season and be 400K for a 95 to 100 player isn't anything to write home about. Whereas Bontempelli, I'm all pretty confident will average 100 for the season.
100 to a 95, that's not really that much of a difference, though.
All I'm telling you is our read of the play is different. So, I mean, the way you're framing the question, obviously, is going to give you the answer that you want. But that's because the read of the plays is different. I'm not as hot on Mitchell. Maybe I should rewatch the game, Mark, and I'll get re-inspired.
Bontempelli is a more inspiring pick because he is a more inspiring player. You do not have to convince me of that. Mm. I just think that Bontempelli's price and his break-even are pretty similar, whereas Mitchell's is, like, close to zero. So Bontempelli, you can wait. Mitchell has to be this week.
And look, Mark, I don't think you can fail with him either. Like, he's got around 12 buys. So at worst, you sideswap him. At worst, you sideswap him and he'll still work out. And I don't think he's going to go down in price. So I don't
sideswap him to the Bont. Yeah. For a profit.
Well, Bont might be at 120. Who knows, Mark? But yeah, we'll agree to disagree. I think you're fighting a good fight. I mean, a player at 400K like Mitchell doesn't come around too often. So I definitely understand where you're coming from. And maybe by the end of the week, you'll have worn me down, Mark. Who knows? We'll get on to the last alternative for Mitchell, though. Brendan Goddard. So this is the true ultra premium option. Yeah. He scored 130 plus 2 weeks in a row. He's averaging 102 right now, and we've seen his top end is obviously way higher. So, Bombers man?
Look, I think that 102 is probably about what he'll probably average for the year. 130 the last 2 weeks, it's been notable that Cooney and Chappie have both been missing for both of those weeks. I think that he's probably had to take more of a midfield role on with those guys out, and it's going to be because I think when they're both in the side, it'll sort of be shared a bit between the three of them going forward and into the midfield. So yeah, I think he's going to have some really big games, but I think he'll also have some quieter games as well, and seems an okay pick for his price.
And with that, we'll move on to the last question of the week. It's from Paul Davis, or at Paulie Davis 27. What is an acceptable number of trades to have left? If I do two this week, he's going to only have 21 left. So it's burning through them quickly. We got a lot of questions about this because everybody's getting a bit worried. What are your thoughts?
I will also have 21 left if I do two this week, and that is less than I would like, but I've also been making a fair bit of movement on my team, and I mean, I know that there's lots of injuries and we've still got the buys to come up, but yeah, I think that that's a reasonable amount if you've got between, you'd want to have 20 or more. I think if you're getting under 20, then you're probably just chasing last week's points too much.
I think a lot of people have said on Twitter and social media that I don't think we've seen a season like this for a long time where it's just been carnage every single week. I think you said it earlier, Marcus, that the injury section of this podcast seems to go longer and longer each week because there's just so much happening. So to have only 21 left, I don't think is you're not going to be the outlier. You're probably more like the norm.
Yep, I'm going to be on 21 too. So that'll make three of us out of the four, if that makes you feel any better. And I think, a good way to look at it is we used to have 20 trades. So when you get down to 20 trades, remember, I used to have to make it through the entire season, upgrading my entire team with these trades. And so I think that you don't have to worry about trades until you probably start getting a lot sparser, unless you're playing for the leagues. If you're in league mode, it's all about trade management and not burning things too early. But I mean, if you're going for the overall, you do what you need to do to move up the rankings.
And hope to hold on.
Yeah, basically that's it. And just understand that we used to have 10 trades less. So get to 20 and have a mini celebration. You still got 20 to go.
And remember, for league players, we're finishing the season season a week earlier than we have in the past as well.
Thank God.
So, you know, there's one less round that you have to survive with fewer trades.
All right. And with that, that wraps up the round six show. So, starting to hit some real fun upgrade downgrade season. Most of us going one up, one down after this week's show. So, enjoy your upgrades. Most of you will be on Tom Mitchell after Mark pumped it up big time. And of course, as always, it was super great to have Dunny join us this week.
Thanks, Dunny.
Thanks for having me, guys. Always a pleasure to join in.
So, Marcus, should you not be listening to my advice? I am ranked like 10,000 places ahead of you.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, if we're going off form, then, I mean, what have we been doing for the last 4 years?
Oh. Well, I took Mark's advice last week and it really helped me, so.
Yeah. No, I should listen to you, Mark. You do seem to have a good read of the season. But to be fair, you've also traded in a fair few of my players. You traded in Goldstein and Gray, and I started with those players. So I'm hoping Lady Luck turns around for me a little bit and I'm not a complete nut job, and hopefully my opinions start carrying a bit more weight when I'm not coming from 16K, Mark. It's not that crazy. I'll prove it to you.
All right. I'll start listening in a few weeks, maybe.
We'll see. All right. Thanks, guys. Had a heap of fun. See ya.
See ya.
See ya, everyone.